Hello,
Hello.
everyone, and welcome to the Black British Legends podcast, where it is my job to decrypt, demystify, and decode the successes of young Black people in the UK. So today I'm joined by a good friend, Ayo, aka God's Goodness, aka Ayo the King, aka Ayo Millionaire, aka Oga, aka the Helper. So Ayo is of Nigerian descent, and he was actually born in Nigeria, but he moved to London, England later on in life. So Ayo is currently in his final year at King's College London, and he's studying engineering. So the reason why I wanted to get Ayo on the podcast today is because he's had quite a lot of experience in terms of internships at several different institutions such as banks, the civil service, consultancy firms. On top of this, he's also a future leader, meaning that he's one of the top Black students in the UK. And he actually is like he told me this recently that he was a top performer on his internship this summer. So well done for that, Ayo. And finally, he has over 5,000 Twitter followers. So hopefully he's gonna let me know how he did that during this interview. But yeah, so Ayo, I want to start by asking you a very, very important question. What did you have for breakfast?
Breakfast today is actually Indian. I was in a rush on my way to church, so I just quickly cooked Indian and then dashed off.
Jeez, the quick end of me, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, that's what you like for you.
Yeah, that's fair play. But you can cook other stuff to the end of me, though, surely.
Absolutely. I'm a master. I consider myself to be a master chef. I
Really?
love cooking. It's very therapeutic, actually. I find it very relaxing.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, it's like you just block everything out, you just cook, and then it's just so relaxing. I agree. But yeah, so I want to start by asking you, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. Interesting fact, I was actually born inside a church. I was born inside a church. And yeah, I was born in Lagos. Grew up in somewhere called Ikorodu. I lived there until I was about 9 and a bit. And then we moved to the UK. And in 2009, I went back to Nigeria where I started my secondary school education. So I did my junior school there. And then after I completed my junior school, I came here to do my GCSEs, and I've been here since.
Wow, so you spent pretty much half your time in Nigeria and half your time here.
That's correct. That is so true.
Okay, so what was your school life like growing up then?
I really had fun in Nigeria. There's a lot of emphasis on academic excellence, and you just grow up. That's just a norm. You just want to be the best. You just know it's around you. But also, people like to enjoy themselves. People like to have a good time. So I think I really had the best of both worlds studying there. But also, I was around people who looked like me, sounded like me, and it was just very comfortable. I really, really loved it. Schooling when I moved to the UK was a bit difficult. There was definitely that language accent barrier because we spoke excellent English, but there was definitely the accent barrier, and also there was a cultural barrier as well. And I guess that made schooling initially a bit difficult, but it's something that we overcame, especially when I moved back to London for the second time. That was smooth sailing, and yeah, it's been pretty good since.
Wow, because the thing is, like, and I've told you this before, I literally can't tell that you're from Nigeria by accent. So they really beat that out of you. Yeah, cool.
Honestly, I mean, I would never. I'm always proud to be Nigerian. Whether or not anyone thinks I sound like a Nigerian, but I'm a proud Nigerian.
For sure. And so I want to ask you as well, like, what extracurricular activity did you do during school in Nigeria and here in the UK?
So whilst I was in Nigeria, I participated in debating. I think from a very young age, I just realized, I can argue for Africa, And people think, oh, we should become a lawyer. But no, I just enjoy the intellectual debates. And that's something that actually helped me integrate when I moved back to London the second time because I was on my school debating team. And that really exposed me into how people enunciated their words. So in Nigeria, everyone speaks beautiful English and, the grammar's on point and extra, they don't speak really basic words. Our command of the vocabulary is amazing. But I never knew how to pronounce those words. So I shied away, and I had to, when I moved back here, my English was very, very basic. But the basic allowed me to grow confidently and speak naturally like I would. So I really appreciated that. So much so that when I finished secondary school and sixth form and got to university, I started to teach kids how to debate as well, because it's such a powerful tool to help you discover your own voice. And it teaches you a lot of life skills, like critical thinking, how to actually dissect an argument, how to know when someone is basically trying to pull the wool over your eyes, you know. Asking the right questions as well can expose flaws in your opponent or in someone's argument, and that can be very useful in real life as well.
Oh, so that thing you're talking about where you taught debating, so that was Debate Mate, right?
Yes, so I was teaching Debate Mate. I was teaching kids how to debate with an organization called Debate Mate, and they go to schools in deprived and low social economic areas, and we teach kids how to debate, and the outcome is so amazing. Kids who were very shy, and by week four, they're confident speakers, and they go on to make amazing friends, and they go on to do great things. It's an amazing organization. I really love what they do.
That's incredible. Okay, so that was during sixth form that you did that, right?
No, that's university, so I've been doing it for over 2 years. It's final year, I'm taking a step back.
Oh, fair play. And speaking of university, so you go to King's College London, and, yes. And what do you study?
Electronic engineering with management.
And what made you want to study that?
Two reasons. I think I love my debating. I really feel comfortable, and this satisfaction with numbers and having things, answers that are unequivocal. Like you can't argue that that's the fact. I think when you study things that are more subjective, your grade is in someone else's opinion. And like, I'm not a big fan of those. But I love numbers. I love working and building things with my hands. And also, there was a purpose for me studying engineering. I grew up in Nigeria, and I saw potential go to waste for simply lack of resources. And for example, I'm actually referring to electricity here. And studying engineering, I think, gives me that skill set to be able to go into further research on how to build low-cost and sustainable energy generation sources that can be used in low economic areas such as, or developing nations such as Nigeria. Because I feel like being able to economically empower yourself is a sure way to eradicate poverty and foster the culture of entrepreneurship we have in Nigeria. Like, the average Nigerian is entrepreneurial, and would be ashamed to let that go to waste due to lack of resources. And I want to be a part of the solution to that problem. That's why I studied engineering. Yeah.
That's incredible. So it was really like a practical reason as well as interest. That's perfect.
Yes. The intersection of both.
I see. And so if you were to advise, you know, any prospective students on the university course they're studying and also what university to study at, what advice would you give to the students?
I think the very first advice would be to know yourself. It's very easy to, you know, get swayed with like, oh, this is the best course to do today. Or, okay, so the world is going to be technical tomorrow, so let everyone go study computer science. Or the world is more creative people, everyone go study art and design. I don't think that's a way to go about it. I think you need to assess yourself as a person and say, what are you genuinely interested in? Because you cannot fake interest, first of all, and you cannot sustain interest of someone else. If someone else tells you, oh, go study computer science, and you go study it, and you end up hating the course, you're not going to survive that long. So it's important that you know what you want to enjoy, what you're going to enjoy. I think be proactive as well. So if you don't know what you want to do, or you maybe have a vague idea, it's important, I think, to go and try out these things. So maybe visiting campuses, watching online lectures of the subjects you want to study, and see what that's like. Because I know it's quite expensive to travel to these universities. So watching online lectures is also a good way. And that's important, something you can also add in your personal statement to show that you have, you know, you're not just going in assuming, you're actually going knowing what you're expecting. And in terms of what university to go to, different people want different things. You know, in the UK, you have campus universities and you have, like, city universities. It's important to know if that's what appeals to you more. But I always say to everyone, strive to go to the best place and best place for your course and best place for you as a person. So some people, you know, if you like coursework and you're studying something like, say, English, don't go to a place where all the English exams are, all the English deliverables are exams. That'll frustrate you. So it's about understanding those tiny, tiny details and doing adequate research. But advice would be apply to the best place for you, research, try out things, ask questions from these good people at those universities as well. The student room could be a fantastic resource. People around you can be a fantastic resource. And I know a lot of universities have like outreach and mentoring programs. So if you show an interest, I'm sure you know they'll connect people with such support as well.
Mm. And you were actually saying something the other day about how at Oxford they do all the exams in the last year, right?
Yes. Yeah, so if you're someone who likes progressive, you want to see how you're doing as you're going along. I mean, they do have like formatives, but your exam output is 100% in your, they call it finals. So the final year exams determine your grade. You have exams before that, but they don't count towards your final grade. And that could be a lot of pressure for someone to handle.
Definitely a lot of pressure.
So it's important to know these things.
For sure, for sure.
That being said, I would encourage everyone who's interested and loves their subject. So if Oxford is the place for you and you feel like, you know, you like the way it's taught, you like the course, 100% apply. If you don't apply, you don't get in. That's the only sure way to not get in. If you don't apply, you don't get in.
Mm. And so I want to ask you specifically about your university. What would you say is the best thing about King's College London or about studying in London?
I think it's two different questions because they have two different answers. So studying in London, I think the proximity to the city. I'm someone who actually wants to work in a city now, and I can just hold any firm events is two buses at most, or you know, a few stops on the train. And I know I have friends in Durham who have to plan their travel weeks in advance, and I just if an event, oh okay, let's go. You know, so that proximity I think is very, very helpful for building my network. This is about studying at King's College London specifically. It's definitely the people I've met here. People here are amazing. People are doing amazing things. And I can sit down, you know, in the cafeteria with someone and just have some of the most amazing discussions about the world, about politics, about life, and just expand my mind and just learn, even sometimes just talking about things on their degree. And I've definitely absorbed a lot of law knowledge just by talking to my friends. You meet a lot of amazing people at university. And you definitely grow as a person. And I think London, and also being associated with University of London, so other universities like LSE, UCL, Imperial, you get to meet a very large student body. And you make friends for life in different parts of the world as well.
For sure. So choose wisely, guys.
I mean, apply for Kings. I would tell that to everyone. It's an amazing place.
Fair play. Okay, so now moving slightly from university, what careers are you interested in and why? And what is it about that particular career path that you like?
In the short term, I want to do something in the finance and technology space. I've always said I have an interest in building things, but also whilst I've been studying and you know, going through secondary school, sixth form, I've been very heavily active in like investment societies and clubs. I set up the investment club at my sixth form. So for me, it's an interest I've developed, and working in that intersection between finance and technology, it gives me so much peace because I feel like I'm actually building the future. And that's kind of why I want to go into a career in that space. Long term, I'll probably like to go to do a PhD in something like renewable engineering or like power generation, because my end goal is to sort of go back to Nigeria and do something in sort of like the infrastructure, electricity, science kind of space. So really, like, just off my career plan, I say that's pretty much it. Next 10 years working in technology and finance. So maybe 20, 30 years, I would like to finish a PhD in sort of like renewable engineering.
Wow, I didn't know you wanted to do a PhD, but that actually makes sense now.
Yeah, you could call me a professor, a doctor, but ultimately I don't even care about the titles. It's more about the knowledge on how to build these things and contribute like new research that can actually focus on helping the African continent to develop.
Amen to that. Make sure you don't just focus on Nigeria. Do some of that in Cameroon as well, yeah, please.
We start somewhere and then we scale. You know, that's important. Like when you're doing kind of research and projects, I mean, you have to narrow your scope and then you scale it up afterwards.
For
So
sure.
I'm sure whatever we do in, even in terms of just in benefit Africa, just in benefit places where you're still developing, places where they can't afford the latest technology, but they need it to grow. I mean, that's always that. There's always that conflict with developing technology, and the people who need it the most don't can't afford it until about the fourth or fifth iteration of that product. So it's about getting the first iteration that's affordable and useful on day one. I guess that's even with that technology and finance space as well. It's about building things that are as useful and as cheap as possible, but still achieving maximum impact. So that's kind of the aim.
Yeah, so start small and then scale. Okay, that's fair enough.
Absolutely.
All right then. So you told us a little bit about what you did with DebateMate earlier on. So tell us a little bit about your other commercial experiences that you've had over the years.
When I was in secondary school, I did an internship at a bank, shadowing the FX traders, and that was an amazing experience. I got to go on the trade floor. I think that was like the spark of finance. I'm like, whoa, this is amazing. So I really loved that experience. Then, so that was like my first finance experience. Then I entered at a law firm, looking at how property is bought and sold. That was very, very interesting. Then I went at Shell for a while, looking at some technology-based, technology internship, and that was really, really cool. So looking at MATLAB and exploring oil fields, that was really cool. Then I got to university, did some work with DebateMate, Teach First. Then I
And what
went to intern. Sorry.
is Teach First?
So Teach First is an organization that recruits graduate students to become teachers to go work in some of the most deprived areas of the country. So some students in this country still haven't had teachers since year 7 and year 9 approaching their GCSEs. They haven't had a stable teacher. They've had a flow of supply teachers who don't stay. And that's very, very poor. We're the fifth largest economy in the world, and we have education systems comparable, or education, some people are experiencing education in our country comparable to underdeveloped nations. I think that's very, very bad. And Teach First is a charity that's working to solve that problem, and I really respect and admire what they're doing. So I got involved in there for a bit. And that was an interesting experience. Then I entered the civil service. So in Department of Transport, looking at HS2 and procurement there, that was really cool. I also learned about some, how they go about conducting security. That was really cool as well. And then went to a lot of, my first year at uni, I went to a lot of events, networking events, with at banks, consulting firms, just learning about the world of work in general and learning about where I fit in. So that was like almost like a soul searching journey. And ultimately that landed a summer internship at an investment bank. And that was, I was there for the past nine weeks of summer. And that was an interesting experience. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and you have a number one intern, right?
Yes, I ranked all of my interns last
You're too humble, man. Number one intern
year.
is like a big deal.
Love that. Thank you so much.
And that was at UBS, right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, man. Well done for that.
Thank you so much.
So if you were to give advice to students about applying to internships and spring weeks, what would be your main pieces of advice?
Two things. Start early and start anyway. Start anyway. I think sometimes people go, I need to know what exact role I want to do. And I mean, Commerce University as a first year, they don't expect much of you, except your grades. And tinge bit of interest. If you just say, okay, I'm interested in learning about banking or consulting or law, or I'm interested in learning about product design, or coding, just a genuine interest. They don't even want much at this point. But I think sometimes students have the perception of they need to be at a certain level before they can apply. And that's why I say start anyway. Even sometimes I've seen people who, told me, wow, I can't believe I got the opportunity. I've just reread my CV and cover letter, and there were so many errors. So I think as a first year, they really give you a lot of leeway. So start anyway, apply anyway. And starting early because these things sometimes work on a rolling deadline. So if they fail before you apply, you really missed out. Another advice is try everything before you knock it. You might be studying, I don't know, law, and you might have this conception that you're gonna be a lawyer or barrister, and then you get to uni, you're like, oh, it's not what I thought it was. So don't just feel like your career is over at that point. I think definitely proud of the industry. You might find that you love technology and you want to become a product owner or like a software developer. There's so many opportunities, so many careers you've never heard of. So definitely have an open mind and explore. But two key things, start early and start anywhere. You don't have to be perfect before you start, just start.
Okay. And in terms of like networking, do you think that is something that students can use to increase their chances of getting internships?
Absolutely. I think I'd be strategic with these networking events. If you're going to the networking event to learn how to apply to the company, you've wasted your time. Because you can really avoid that online. And I know this, oh, that's a bit harsh, but it's true. What you want to go there to do is ask questions that no one else is asking. Ask questions that you can't find answers on the website. Questions that will, when you get the answer, gives you a real insight into what the firm is like. Gives you a real insight into what the people there are like. So if the team is working on, I don't know, a deal in Monaco, for example, and that's something that interests you and it's public information, public knowledge. And let's say for example you have a Cameroonian background, you go, oh, so if any deals are coming up that maybe you're gonna do on the African continent, like Cameroon, for example, no one is asking that. So they'll remember you, oh, the Cameroonian guy. So it's about standing out and being different. But also I've seen people who go into these events and they've got mentors off the back of it. And that mentor becomes their sponsor, helps them with, application, cover letter, video interview, everything they need to do to go into the firm. And there's nothing better than having someone in the firm who's already vouching for you. I think that's the power. That's someone in your network that believes in you already in that firm. So your chance of success skyrocket at that point. You're not just another CV. There's not enough face application. They can put a face to you now. And you've made your mark on the firm. So when you're networking, be intentional, come prepared, present yourself in the best way possible, ask intelligent questions, questions that help you answer maybe your CV and like the online screening questions. For example, when you ask people, ask them, why did they join the firm? Why have they stayed so long? And maybe you start to find a common theme with the different people's answers. And when you're communicating why you want to join the firm, you have something to say that sounds true. So it's important that you go through things knowing what you want to get out of it, and it can't just be learning how to apply, because if you do that, you're wasting your time.
And so the main networking events are like insight days, diversity, inclusion kind of things. Is that right?
That's the diversity ones are definitely a pathway, but they're not the only ones. I really appreciate the diversity networking events, but I think where they will be. Sometimes it's in the offices, sometimes it's on campus. There's merit to both. The on-campus one, the formality is a bit less, and you can actually have genuine open conversations with people. I think when you're in the firm, you need to be very formal, and maybe there's like an expectation in your head that you can't ask them questions, you're a bit shy. But I think sometimes if you go to the firm, you actually get to meet more people, because of course the firm can't send the whole analyst class to come and talk to you. But they can probably bring quite a few analysts downstairs in the firm where you could talk to a lot of people and network with them better. So go on the websites, and they're really advertising things very, very well now. Go on the websites and you see what events they have and where they're going to be. Even if it's on a different, different university or a different campus, right? You can email them and tell them you really want to come, if that's okay. And I think they'll appreciate the proactivity. I've definitely gone to events held by firms that weren't on my campus, and they appreciated the that I was proactive and took initiative to email them to ask to come, and they said yes. So be different. If you want to meet a firm, be intentional about this and go meet them.
Okay, thank you very much. And also, so what is the application process for a banking role, for example?
Different banks have different method. Some of them, you know, the first step is you send in a CV and a cover letter. Some even have screening questions. You'd be like, tell me about a time when you demonstrated XYZ, or what's an interesting project you worked on? They're just screening questions, and I think they're kind of testing, seeing how you've handled yourself in the past. If that is, if they see, if they see how you've handled yourself in the past, does that relate to the company and relate to how they do things? So just trying to find if you're a good fit. They're called fit questions. And after that, some people have like a telephone interview, an in-person or higher view video interview as well sometimes. An in-person interview, and then they get the offer. That's like the most you ever see. Sometimes it's literally just CV, cover letter, phone interview, offer. I've seen that happen before. But if you want, it's important to know what the application process is for the firm you're applying to, whether it be in banking, consulting, law. So you're never blindsided. And then that's, for example, some consulting companies, part of the interview is a case workshop where you are putting a group with people you've never met before, and you have to work on a certain case study and pitch your solution. If you've never done that before, you've never practiced that before, and the first time you're doing that is at your interview, it's scary. And, you know, that's almost like you're preparing yourself for failure. So it's very, very important that you go online. There's so many resources online where you can literally Google and search for what is the application process for firm XYZ, and make sure you're aware and you practice every sort of different type of assessment that you can meet along the way to ensure that you're successful.
Okay. So Google is our friend.
Google is definitely your friend, your best friend even at this point.
Yeah. And so what other, organizations like would you say are helpful and useful when you want to make applications?
For young people who study in the UK, Bright Network, SEO London, Rare Recruitment, they're fantastic organisations. And they don't neglect your university career service. They have so many students that have gone through that department, and they have access to these students. So say, for example, you want to be a lawyer and you want to work in a certain firm, there's someone from your university who has gone to work there. They know this person. They have connections with this person. And they can, you know, set up a coffee for you where you get to learn about the firm and just meet this person. And that alumni relationship is there. Also, LinkedIn. So sometimes it's not just about, you know, structured organizations, but maybe tools and platforms as well. So LinkedIn as a platform allows you to search for people. You know, say you search for people who work at Nestle Freshfields, for example. It will tell you how many people from the university that you're connected with work at this place. And you can just reach out to them and be like, hi, person X, I am person Y, I study at your university, and I found out you work at the firm I want to go to. Do you have 15 minutes to talk to me about your firm and your journey into the firm? People love to share their story, and people want to give back. And I think it's just about asking. So organizations are there to help you, but I guess you also have to be proactive in seeking creative ways to learn about these places and network your way in there as well.
I see. Okay, definitely. Okay. So I want to ask you as well, I think this is really important. Because obviously you've had a lot of commercial experiences in different industries, what would you say are, you know, the similarities and differences between the people who apply to, say, banking or civil service or in the charity sector?
I think everyone of those people have a purpose. And they have different skill sets and they're interested in building different skill sets. So someone who goes into banking, for example, would want to build up a more technical and more financially driven skill set. Like, okay, I want to be competent at evaluations and modeling and DCF, or maybe build up their accounting skills, for example, to go into like an accounting firm. So they have an interest in numbers, so it's an interest thing, and then they want to build a skill set in a certain area. And my friends who go into, say, for example, consulting, they kind of want to be generalist, or they have like an ambition to be an entrepreneur or start their own business. And, you know, consulting gives fantastic training, and they turn out a lot of entrepreneurs as well. So I guess it's about knowing what they know what their interest is. They know what skills that they want to develop, and they know what the end goal is. Even in the civil service and charity sector, similar things. I've got a friend who's currently working at a big charity, and her aim is to end up working in the UN, and she's just building up the experience with charitable organizations to leverage that when she comes to, you know, applying and getting a role in the UN. So again, just keep it simple. Know what you're interested in, and I think that's a commonality between everyone. Know what skill set you want to build and develop, and know what your end goal vaguely is, and that should be able to steer you in very clear what pathway you should go down at that point. That's kind of my opinion on that.
Okay, so what about your values and what you want to, you know, get at the end of the day?
Personal values, I really believe it's important to, in this world we live in today, to have empathy. It's very, very easy to get caught up in your own agenda and what you're doing and forget about the world around you. But it's very important to care, because if you are in those situations, you want someone to care too. So personal value of mine that I try and live by every day is showing empathy. Very, very important. Another one is integrity. If you say you're going to do something, do it. And it allows you to become almost ruthless with your time. So if you know someone's giving you a piece of work, or someone has asked you, oh, can you help with this or that, and you realize, well, that's going to take me 6 hours to do, and I've only got 1 hour spare today, you're like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. You now become a person of integrity, because you're not, if you say you're going to do something, they know you're going to do it. Also, it's just about having a good moral standard, and not being found doing dodgy things, you know. So integrity is very, very important to me. I think another one is just helping people, showing genuine care. I love helping people. I love making people into the best version of themselves. Either just by talking to them or giving them resources. And I think that's very, very important, you know, in the world we live in today. No one's an island, and you want to invest in people around you. You want to help people because, firstly, it gives you satisfaction, but also it's important because when you need help, there'll be people there for you as well. And on a professional level, I guess there are three key things that I really uphold. I want to be part of simplifying our needlessly complex and complicated world. I want to be part of building a truly sustainable and inclusive future. I want to create and share true value. I feel those are my three sort of professional values and that guide me anything I'm doing professionally. And then I mentioned the three personal values that I try and sort of excavate every day.
I see that. That's amazing, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, so now we're going to move into the money section of the podcast.
The Wonga section, love it.
The Wonga section, exactly. And we don't call you IO Millionaire for no reason. I know that you are very, very well-versed in this particular area of life. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about that. So I want to ask you, what investing strategies do you use, and what sort of things do you invest in? Teach us.
I think I won't call myself someone who teaches people how to invest. I'm a learner myself. But the key thing is, if someone has an interest in learning how to invest, is starting very, very small. I said it anyway. Start anyway. There's so many platforms now that let you almost trade with fake money, so running virtual portfolios, and that could be a way to test the market. Say, for example, you know, you are someone who has all the technology products in the world. You love Apple Beats. You love, you use Samsung phone. You have it. You care about these things, right? So maybe technology is your interest. So start looking at technology companies that maybe you use. Look at how Apple stocks are performing. Look at how Sony is performing. And make a prediction. So say, for example, it's Monday, 9 a.m. Actually, it'll be 1 p.m., but let's say Monday 9 a.m., you check the stock price of Apple, you go, you know what, in the next 3 weeks, I think, or let's even say a week, I think Apple stock is going to rise. And you have no information telling you yes or no. It's a random prediction in your mind, and I think that's a good way to start, like a random guess, a gamble, realistically. And then you buy one Apple stock, or fake money at this point, with an expectation that it's going to go up. And at the end of the week, close the app or close the software, the website, wherever it is, and you come back a week later and you check the stock price, oh, it's gone down. And that's where interest starts, you know, you go, why has it gone down? You start to look at the news articles that came out since the day you invested. You start to look at how it's performed comparatively over different time periods. So say, for example, this was, I don't know, September, where Apple stock has gone down, be like, but why? And then look at other Septembers before this year and go, oh, okay, so it's cyclical. It happens every September, so maybe it's nothing to worry about. And they start to realize over time what affects stock prices, what affects different sectors. And you start to realize how interdependent sectors are. How does political news affect companies? For example, when you hear things about trade wars, how is that going to affect certain company stocks? Who will not be affected by such news? I think it's by taking a very simple interest in a small sector or a small industry and then doing it afterwards. So for me, I really like cryptocurrencies and face stock, no equity. Those are my two main things in my portfolio at the moment. And I use eToro as a platform to make these trades.
Okay, so eToro, is that a website or an app?
It's got a website and an app. I feel like in the world we live in today, everyone's very mobile, everyone's got a phone. So I advise everyone to get it on their phone and get the app. But if you feel like, you know, you want a bigger screen, you want it to be graphed a bit better, and you want to do your technical analysis very well, I guess you can also, you know, go on the computer and use it too.
Okay, so you literally just like put in a certain amount of money and then you invest in certain different... So if it was cryptocurrency, you'd invest in different currencies, basically.
Yes. So before anyone starts with real money, I always, always recommend like a 1 month period of running a virtual portfolio and seeing if that holds your interest. Because sometimes I think people get into investing in trading for the very, very wrong reasons, because they think, oh, I'm going to put £1 in and then sleep and wake up and there's £1 million in there. And if you run a virtual portfolio and it did not excite you, if you run a virtual portfolio and you found it to be a chore, then maybe you shouldn't put real money into the stock market. So I always ask people to go on training wheels before they go into the real world. Well, if after running your virtual portfolio for a month, you fall in love with it, then absolutely start small. Start with how much you're going to spend on a pair of shoes. £100, you know.
Yeah.
It's so small, but it really allows you to almost take ownership of your portfolio, and you learn so much about yourself, about your appetite for risk, about how you deal with failure, because you're definitely, failure is inevitable in this sort of environment. And you learn how to trust yourself. And it really builds you up as a person, I think, but it's not for everyone. And that's why I always encourage people to try it on safety net with training wheels, with a virtual portfolio. And then if you love it, pivot into using real money.
Wow, I actually learned so much just now. Thank you for that. And, and I want to ask as well, so is eToro for cryptocurrency or is it for everything?
Everything. So, but I use it to trade crypto.
And there's different platforms exactly like eToro that do exactly the same thing, basically?
Yes, Plus500 as well is also another one. But for me, I just really like the user interface of eToro. They're not that much different. I mean, when it comes to things like maybe how much you charge in fees and how much you charge to withdraw, then the user interface of eToro is very, very intuitive.
Okay. And what virtual platforms would you recommend?
eToro, Plus500. Those are the two that I like. Oh, I've tried other ones, but they feel very not well designed to me. Also, you can really have, you know, someone else run it for you. There are companies that could do that. I personally have never done that route before because I consider myself to be an active investor. I want to be part of the trading decision that's being made. There are different routes, and I think people should definitely, if you're interested, research what works for you as a person. If you're someone just like, I just want to put my money somewhere and then come back in 10 years and it's doubled, then maybe just leave it, you know, in a passive fund somewhere, or let someone else run it for you. No, you don't have to do it yourself.
Okay, that's fair enough then. And I want to ask you as well, are you currently invested in any property, or do you have any plans in the future to invest in property?
Absolutely, I would like to get involved in property. At the moment, I don't have property, but I would love to find houses, selling houses in high growth areas across the world. I think that'll be it'll be a very it's always been a profitable vent, you know, venture. So I'll see what I see what I want to see what the future holds, but I think I can see myself investing in some property as well.
Okay, fair enough. But now that we are talking about money and finances, I find that this is actually a topic that a lot of people like don't know much about, but
True.
it's so important to know about it because things like credit, for example, literally dictate, you know, how your life goes. Like I was listening to a podcast today and someone was saying that if you don't say, for example, pay your parking tickets, that could like reduce your credit score. Your credit rating, and that can make it difficult for you to then take out a loan for, say, like a mortgage in the future. So what would be your top, you know, financial advice to give to people, or something you wish you'd known a few years ago?
Be financially responsible, and by that I mean know what your total income is. So let's say you have a part-time job, you know, and for students, like, you have your student finance coming in, you have your parents need some money. Don't spend more than your earnings. I think a very useful tip is when all your income is coming, have your the first you leave is your savings. So you spend what's left after you save, not save what's left after you spend. That's a very, very important thing. So you save first. That's the important part. You save first. The second thing is, not every bargain is a bargain. Say, for example, you know, you go to a shop and it's like, oh, £50 today, and it was 250, £250 before. You haven't just spent £200, you've just spent £50, you know. And, you know, sometimes people talk about money. They don't talk about money in such a strange way. Because, oh, yeah, that's £200. I'm like, yeah, but you just paid £50 for that. Like, you spent money. And spending money is not a bad thing. But I think it's almost just justifying the purchase simply because of the savings. So you end up buying things you don't need. Start making shopping lists rather than buying things impulsively. Compare
100.
brands. Sometimes, you know, people go buy, I don't know, what's an expensive brand of? You go to, I don't know, you go buy
Giuseppe's.
Waitrose tuna, but Sainsbury's tuna tastes exactly the same.
Damn,
But
Waitrose
you're
tuna is
paying
a bad idea. That just sounds like a bad idea.
you're paying £2 extra for Waitrose tuna. So I think sometimes it's about being financially savvy. You know, if you watch your pennies, the pounds are worth themselves. So making shopping lists, shopping around, that allows you to save. And you can save, you can start to invest. And once you can invest, you can start to grow your capital, and you can start to do more amazing things with your money, like buying houses, for example. But I think a lot of young people have so much potential to save so much, but I guess we haven't been taught how to do so. But there's so many financial courses online on YouTube and people that really talk about this, and this is like their career. Like they go about sharing and selling financial education to people, and I guess they are more qualified to speak on this topic than I am. But I think top three tips is be financially savvy, save before you spend, and shop around. Be smart with your money. If you watch the pennies, the pounds will watch themselves.
Damn, I like that. If you watch the pennies, the pounds will watch themselves, right?
Absolutely.
Damn, I like that. I gotta write that down. Someone needs to put that on a t-shirt. I like that. And so, if you were to give like, you know, a podcast or a book or a YouTube like video to help people with finances, like what would you recommend?
One book that my mum gave to me very, very early on was Rich Dad Poor Dad, and 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And 7 Habits of Highly Effective People doesn't really talk about money in that way. But if you are someone who's highly effective in every aspect of your life, you'll also be effective in your finances. And I think that book builds the foundation of a solid mind and a mind that's in control. And you won't be swayed by stupid deals that aren't really deals, that are just going to take your money. And it's a really strong platform before anyone can, I think, become financially sound. In terms of podcasts, there's a podcast called Rice at Home that I really enjoy. That one, it talks to you very, very frankly about money advice, talks to you about comparing cards and things that you probably don't even know how to do. You know, say you're going on holiday, you know, what holiday card should I get? Should I convert the money here? Should I convert the money there? Really, really simple things like that they talk about and give sound advice on. So I 100% recommend those three books. So read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey first, then read Rich Dad Poor Dad, then we can always listen to Rice at Home podcast. They're both three fantastic resources, I think.
Definitely, I can definitely vouch for that. So there you go, guys. Three fantastic resources to help you with your finances. I find it like really incredible that your mom gifted you those books, by the way. That's incredible.
Thank you. I was telling you that, sir.
Yeah. So now we're going to move on to a quick fire round where I'm going to ask you some quick questions and I expect some quick answers. So,
okay.
Your favorite superhero?
Iron Man.
And why?
He's a technologist like me, so we're friends.
Fair play. Your favorite food?
Rice, stew, plantain with prawns. Can't go wrong.
Oh, I gotta try that. Your favorite Afrobeats artist?
Davido. When the song comes on in the club, you know it's about to go down.
Davido. Alright, fair enough. Your favorite color?
I'm gonna say two. Black and gold. They complement each other so beautifully.
Black and gold. Where have I seen that combination before? Is that Black Panther? That's where I've seen it.
Yes, there. At weddings, when you see the guy, you know, he's got that black tux, the gold bow tie, and the crisp white shirt. You go, like, there's something about it.
Is that you in a couple of years?
Yeah, wedding planning, you know, in my head already.
Man, alright.
maybe I'm planning my graduation outfit, you don't know, but black and gold.
Wow.
Up, guys.
Graduation outfit. I just realized, in fact, a lot of people spend a lot of money at graduation, don't they?
Yeah, graduation is a scam. You pay to graduate. Like, I paid to study for 3 years. How am I paying to graduate? What am I paying to graduate then? Like, what's my own? Just going to mind my business.
All right. Niger jollof or Cameroonian jollof?
I think this is a fair question.
You weren't expecting that?
I've never tried Cameroonian jollof. So what are you going to do now is to make this a fair question, you are going to deliver some Cameroonian jollof to my house. Right?
Wow.
And then after that, you can answer this question, and I can give you a solid answer. But for now, based on all the facts in front of me, Mr. Judge?
Yeah?
Nigerian jollof.
Is that you? Yeah, without even trying it. Weren't you the one who said to not knock something before you try it?
I did say, with all the facts in front of me currently, you haven't presented your Cameroonian jollof, so I cannot comment on the quality or absence thereof of said jollof rice.
Yeah, but surely, like, you can't say that Niger's better when you haven't tried Cameroonian jollof yet.
All I've been, like I said, you asked me this question, and you presented me half, you've given me one type of rice that I've had and tested. And what I can tell you right now is that Niger jollof is amazing.
Okay. Okay, then. Niger jollof or Ghana jollof?
See, I've tried both. And my answer is very, very simple. Niger jollof.
Wow, some Ghanaian people are going to be triggered. But that's right.
Their personal situation. That's their personal business.
All right, then. And I want to ask you as well. So would you rather take £100,000 now or have dinner with Jeff Bezos and why?
So is this a question that says, would I ever take £100,000 with my tiny and have a core capital, or would I rather sit with one of the richest men in the world?
Literally the richest.
In technology, he's also a technologist. Okay, I think that's a simple question. I'm going to take dinner with Jeff Bezos every day. Even if that was £1 million, I would take dinner with Jeff Bezos. That's someone you're going to have in your network. That's someone that could mentor you. That's someone that you can learn from. And who's to say that you could go to that, you know, especially if you know the dinner's coming up, you're going to come with that fantastic pitch deck to get that investment. And, you know, obviously, you're not going to pitch at dinner. That's very, very rude. But you build a relationship that you can follow up on, and you can go pitch there in his office. And you can secure them that 1 million or that £100,000 funding.
Yeah, that's true. He's got a lot of money to give away, I've heard. A lot of money.
Maybe you should try paying his staff sometimes.
Pardon?
Maybe you should try paying his staff sometimes.
Ooh, wow. Controversial.
Mind my business.
But yeah, okay. So moving on to the topic of Africa. So obviously you're from Nigeria and you're even born in Nigeria, which, you know, I found out just recently. So would you say you identify as British or Nigerian or Black British?
I'm an African man of Nigerian descent. That's also British. How does that sound?
An African man of Nigerian descent who is also British. That sounds about right.
You know, I don't think I'm any less of one than I am the other. My heart is always in Nigeria. It's where I grew up. Even in the UK, I immerse myself in Nigerian culture. When I'm here, I also immerse myself in British culture. So, and there's this very beautiful emergence of Black British culture as well, which I guess is the fusion of the two. I think, yeah, you know, as a human being, you adapt to the environment. I feel like if I go and live in Nigeria for a few more years, I'll be more Nigerian. If I stay in London a bit longer, I'll be more British. I feel like, you know, it's really fluid at times as well. It's really based on the environment you're in.
That's facts. And so, do you plan on using your skills and your knowledge to go back and help Nigeria in any way?
Absolutely. I think that my upbringing in Nigeria is actually what has contributed to me studying the course I'm studying. And, you know, my passion is still there. It's never gone away. It's actually another reason why I actually want to study a PhD or at least conduct some useful new research in the space of renewable and energy generation. So absolutely, I would love to contribute my skills to improving life on the continent.
Okay then, thank you. So I want to ask you now about your values. So first of all, I want to ask you, how do you think your family life or how do you think your parents have impacted the way you see the world?
This is a very interesting question because I don't think parents are actually intentional about instilling values. I mean, they can say that I want my kid to do X, Y, Z. But I feel like whilst they might say things, it's what they do that you watch more. And I grew up seeing my parents be very, very generous. And it's something I've taken on. And now I love helping people. I love giving people. And I understand people's plight and I empathize with them. So that's definitely something growing up with the wonderful family I have, that shaped me that way. Also, I think the career path, my mom's an auditor and she's an accountant. So that part of managing people's money, that part of being very honest and being very truthful and having integrity, I guess also you see that from her. And you absorb it as a child as well.
You told me an incredible story about your mum the other day about how she used to, about, you know, gratitude and about how she used to walk in a gutter but barefoot. Did you say?
Yeah. So my mother went to school in Nigeria with no shoes, and she had no bag. She had like this black plastic bag is where she kept all her books, and she had it in her hand. And she walked to school, the road is hot, and she'll walk off the road into the gutter to cool her feet and continue. And, you know, this was normal for her. And she still achieved the best result, went on to study accounting, went on to get an MBA and start her own company. So it's, you know, it's been an amazing journey and she's such an inspiration. And every time I kind of feel a bit lazy or give myself excuses, I'm like, you have shoes and you have a bag. You must achieve more than she has. So she's a massive, massive inspiration. And I feel like that determination and that drive and the commitment to excellence that she has definitely rubbed off on me. And she's absolutely wonderful. She's my inspiration.
Okay. And so, building from that, what would you say is your why? What drives you to achieve success?
Helping people better than they were yesterday,
Mm.
helping people achieve a level of self-belief that they never thought they could, to then go on to accomplish things they never dreamt they would. It's very, I feel like my life purpose is to help people, either through the solutions and technologies I'm building, either through the products I'm financing, or just even through conversation. That's definitely my purpose, that's definitely my why. And I am very intentional about not losing focus of that.
See, I love that. And so, if you were to, picture what success is, or picture someone who you think epitomizes success, what comes to mind?
There's a guy called Tristan Walker. He's an entrepreneur who grew up in New York, in a poverty-stricken area, from humble beginnings, and went on to do his MBA at Stanford. I seem to have a thing for MBAs, don't I? He went to do his MBA at Stanford, and he developed a product to help alleviate the shaving problem that black men have. And I guess it's because it's such a simple problem, but it's also a targeted solution. But I think it's also the background and the challenges he overcame to achieve success. The odds were stacked against him. He statistically shouldn't be where he is, but he's defied those odds consistently. And he's a massive inspiration as an entrepreneur. And I really think he epitomizes what I think success is that constant drive. And I guess, you could say people like Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett are all successful, and they are successful, no doubt. But I feel like for me, there's a certain extra part of success or extra level of admiration I have of people who are successful despite the most challenging circumstances. People who eat what the environment has given them. I really admire people like that, and that's why I think success is to me.
And so, what would you say it has been your greatest success?
Is hard. I'm only 20.
20 years young, baby.
I think it's the feedback I get from people that I've helped. I get a lot of messages on LinkedIn, even just WhatsApp, Snapchat, people that have, shared my story, people that I've sat down with and had coffee with, who have now gone on to do amazing things. I'm part of an organization called Revolution London, and for 3 years now, I've been helping young students transition from secondary school to sixth form and sixth form to university. And some of the very first cohort are now at amazing universities studying amazing courses. And that gives me so much satisfaction. And I'm so happy about that, that we've been able to help with that transition and help raise aspirations and ambitions. And now these people have achieved amazing things or achieving, and we're going to achieve even more amazing things. To me, I think that's one of my greatest success. Being able to add value to people's lives that has now materialized, and yeah, that makes me so happy.
Wow, so it's literally just helping people that's what that's incredible, and that's why we call you the helper, because you literally just
Absolutely.
help people, you put people on. Damn.
It's
And so
vital. It's really, really vital. If you want to, you have to invest in your community. You have to invest in people around you. I feel like relationships are definitely two-sided. It's about giving and receiving. But if you want to ever receive at any point in your life, you must give. And I think it's important to give more than you receive. Even if you don't, so you could be in a relationship, so you have like a mentor who's much older than you, much more experienced than you. You're in a relationship where you're only receiving from that person for at least for a very long period of time. But it's important that you're giving. Even if it's not to that person, you give it to other people. People who, there's always someone who's not as knowledgeable as you. There's always someone who's not as privileged as you. It's very, very important that you give. And I guess with that giving philosophy is why I really like helping people.
And so, helper, what habits have you adopted in the past year that have helped you in your life?
Knowing when to say no. I think with people who have similar personalities and traits as I do, you might struggle to say no. You know, you just want to help everyone and you feel like it's your responsibility to save the world. But I think it's important to also be cautious of you and protect your time and protect your own energy as well. You can't give what you don't have. You can't pour from an empty cup. So no way to say no to protect yourself and protect your time. That's definitely something I've learned this past year and more appreciated the value of even more. Some of the girls that I've done or I'm doing this year or this academic this calendar year is getting closer to God and building my faith. That's something that I have been very intentional about doing and it's served me well. I feel like I'm in a much closer relationship with God than I was in January. And for me, it's about this progress every day. For some people, it's just reading and getting more knowledgeable. And I do that thanks to the podcast. I read a lot. But in addition to all these things, I think two of the important things is knowing how to protect my time, but also helping people and getting closer to God. Definitely does.
Yeah, I actually saw you tweet something about not doubting God on your Twitter the other day.
Yeah, you know what? This year has been amazing. This year, God has blessed me in so many ways. You know, internships, offers, so many ways. And it's important to always give glory and gratitude back to God. And, you know, sometimes it's very easy to doubt, like, if it's going to happen, you know, it's just anxious for no reason. But this year, definitely just taught me not to doubt God. What will be, He's going to sort it out.
Wow, that's powerful.
And just about having faith. And my faith is definitely going stronger this year, 100%.
And God bless you with more Twitter followers this year as well.
You really love this Twitter thing. This is not real life. I keep saying this. This is not real life.
Nah, it's not.
But, people are funny on Twitter, but not in real life. Twitter's not real life.
It's crazy. But, like, the thing is, like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get how some people just have so many, you know? With Instagram, I get it. You put pictures, you get like. But Instagram, but Twitter is just like, you just say stuff. Why do people look at it?
Sometimes it's just people are just genuinely. I follow people because they're funny. If you're funny, I'll follow you. If you tweeted one tweet that I made me laugh, because I'm not just like the breathing out your nose kind of laugh, like I cackled, I am going to follow you.
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, so I think, also if you're adding value, there's some people who I follow that tweet a lot of commercial awareness stuff, or, you know, they have a lot of interesting analysis on what happened on the market, and none of that is follow them, I send them tweet notifications. So anytime they tweet something, I'm there to read it and understand, you know, what they think, because I really value their opinion as well. So I think the two key ways, be funny or add value. So pick your strategy.
Okay, that's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to choose. All right, then.
Both, you can add value and be funny. I mean, there's some you add value and are funny, but I heard it's a bit more rare.
So what did you do then to gain your following?
I'll say I was funny. I like to say I was funny. I really just tweet what's on my mind. And I guess people think they can relate to it. So they follow. But I don't think anyone supports this. Unless you're a business or you're trying to, you know, do something massive, I don't think you want your Twitter followers. They don't want to follow you in real life. That's the truth. So rather watch your finances, watch your grades. These are the important things to be watching.
For sure. Okay, then. So moving on to the last part. If you could remind us before we leave of your personal values.
Personal values are empathy, integrity, and helping people. These three things. Being empathetic, having integrity, and helping people around you, helping the world around you is very, very vital.
That's brilliant. Okay. And if you could give us your favorite quote on anything, what would it be?
Ooh. So there's a story behind this one. And before I told you what the quote is. So I was at an event September, early first week of September, and a CEO of Ochi in Spain came, and he was talking about something his grandma always told him. So he studied at Yale and was top of his class, and then went to Yale Law School and was top of his class. And all through that process, he had self-doubt. This is someone that was top of the... How are you top of your class and doubt yourself? Like, you know that even on your worst day, you're probably still going to get a B. Like, that's the worst. But, you know, even he suffered from self-doubt, and he always remembered what his grandmother told him. And the quote was, "You are as good as any, better than many, and inferior to none." And I feel like in a lot of young people today, that self-doubt is a real problem, and is really stopping people from being the best version of themselves and grabbing opportunities that can really change their lives. And that quote, just, I want everyone to know, everyone to hear it, that you are as good as any, you're better than many, and you're inferior to none. So delete the imposter syndrome, delete the "it's not for me, I don't think I'm going to make it" mentality, and just remember, you're inferior to none. I think that's one of my favorite quotes that I've heard in recent times.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, that's good. I think that's a good way to end the podcast. But I just want to say, I thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. You are a true Black British legend.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you for having me. I honestly appreciate it. I'm honored.
Don't worry about it. Just keep on doing what you do and keep on being a Black British legend. All right, that's going to be the end of this episode. I hope you guys check out the rest of the episode and follow us on Instagram at Black British Legends. What are your socials, Ayo?
Ayo Millionaire on Twitter. that's it.
All right, then make sure you follow Ayo and follow us on Instagram as well. Peace.